Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Every year, as Ramadan approaches, many in the Muslim community turn into pseudo-astronomers and classical scholars. Every punter on WhatsApp has something to say about the moon, where it was sighted, and why this country or another are wrong. Of course, this comes from a good place. We all know that the Prophet ﷺ ordered us to sight the moon as a condition for starting and ending Ramadan, and we all strive to perfect our ibadat. But there is something farcical about the debates. It has become a metaphor for our broader divisions. You can have two countries in the same region declaring Ramadan on different days, and sometimes, as is found in the West, two people on the same street or in the same community on different days of the calendar when it comes to Ramadan. When I was younger, the phrase, "When did you start Ramadan?" was a way of establishing which mosque your companion followed. Countless hours of my youth were spent debating the merits and demerits of international versus local sighting, calculations versus direct sight. My guest this week is Ustad Iyad Hilal. He is an Islamic scholar and is soon to publish the third edition of his popular Usul al-Fiqh book, aimed at English-speaking Muslims. He has spent years studying the topic of moon sighting and argues that in origin, a lot of debates about what constitutes sighting have been subject to differences between the classical scholars for centuries. To insist on one way, as some Islamic groups do, in the absence of a caliphal authority that resolves disputes, comes from a very shallow understanding of the lawfulness of differences of opinion in Islam. He argues that it is perfectly natural for there to be differences of interpretation of text, and that the correct way is to accept the differences with adab and civility. In other words, there is no problem in having differences of opinion when it comes to Ramadan and moon sighting, as long as it's based on a sincere reading of the Islamic sources of law. Ustad Iyad Hilal, Jazakallah khair for joining us today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for inviting me for this.
No, Jazakallah khair, and it's a very interesting discussion, and every year, of course, Muslims are engaged in debates about moon sighting. Now, we've seen year on year there's a controversy around the sighting of the moon for Ramadan and Eid, and I just want to clarify the Islamic position on the issue, and also I suppose I want to clarify how can we move on from this topic in order for it to not be a cause of division within our community? So firstly, can I ask, we know that in Islam there are definitive matters that are not subject to interpretation. And then there are matters which are subject to some level of interpretation, and of course within the correct Islamic limits. How do we view the subject of moon sighting? Is it a definitive issue in the deen, or is it an issue that scholars have had a dispute over?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, the issue of fasting is definitive. fasting Ramadan is definitive. There are some exceptions for the sick or for the traveler. But the fact that we have to fast in Ramadan, not any month else, this is qat'i, this is definitive. Fasting in any other month or any other days is sunnah. The question regarding moon sighting or how to define the beginning of Ramadan is not definitive. There is room for more than one view. So it is what do I call dhanni, not definitive issue. And in the Ahkam Shar'iyya, you don't need a conclusive evidence. You don't need qat'i evidence. An evidence that is less than qat'i, that has room for more than one probability, is accepted. So we need to realize in this issue regarding the moon sighting and its related matters, it's not a qat'i issue. We don't have to agree, all of us, as ummah, deciding to fast in this day or that day. That is the authority of the central political authority of the ummah, which is the khilafah or the imamah or the ruler. To unite Muslims, the khalifa would ask all people, okay, this is the sighting, or this is in this day, so and so, we will start Ramadan. But for me, if I have another view, I'm entitled to keep my view and even talk to people about it. But as a matter of practice, Ramadan will start, whether I agree with the view or not. That's why some jurists said that if a person saw the moon and his sighting was not accepted by the qadi or by the imam, he has to fast with the people.
Let me clarify. Well, two questions, really. In Islamic history, was that the way it was done? So in the long duration of Islamic history, when the khalifa, when the imam made a decision, all of the Muslims would abide by that, even if it differs with their own view. And secondly, I suppose, you said that this is a matter which is dhanni, which is based on, which is not a definitive issue. So am I right in saying there's been debates amongst Muslim scholars from the classical ulama who differed on the issues surrounding the moon sighting and its rules?
Let me answer the first question first. In the past, communication was not as today. So practically speaking, even if the Khalifa decides on this day, this will not be reaching to all people in all areas. Different than in the Hajj. In the Hajj, when you cite the Hijjah, still you have 9 days for Arafah. So you can reach people within those 9 days from Baghdad to Morocco. So that was practical practice, not because of each area wants their own moon sighting. But also there was an incident. Kuraib came to Medina. There was a discussion about the moon sighting. When did it start? So did it start today? Did it start the other day? So Kuraib says that Umm al-Fadl sent him to Muawiyah in Bilad al-Sham. He was the caliph there. So he says, فَقَدِمْتُ الشَّام. I went to al-Sham, to where Muawiyah is, and I fulfilled what she wanted me to do, and Ramadan came while I was in al-Sham there. So I saw the moon Friday night. And then I came to Medina at the end of the month. So Abdullah ibn Abbas asked me about the Hilal. He said, when did you see the moon? He told him, we saw it in the night of Jum'ah. He told him, did you see it? He said, yes, I saw it. وَرَآهُ النَّاسِ. And even people saw it. And wasamu. Wasama Muawiyah. And they fasted, and Muawiyah fasted. فقال عبد الله بن عباس لكننا رأيناه ليلة السبت. But we saw him in the night of Saturday. So we will continue fasting until we finish 30 days, or we'll see it in reference to the month of Shawwal. So he told him, wouldn't you be sufficient with the sighting of Muawiyah? He told him, no. Similar to this, Rasulullah ﷺ ordered us. This hadith is authentic, and the people who promote local sighting accept. Actually, this is the view of Abdullah ibn Abbas, the proponents of moon global sighting. Said, wait a minute, the statement of Ibn Abbas, he didn't say, أمرنا رسول الله, that Rasulullah ordered us to do so, but rather he said, هكذا أمرنا, similar to this, so he ordered us. So it tells you that there was a debate about moon global sighting and local sighting. And here it is in Medina and in Bilat al-Sham, which is same geographical area, not as an example, Baghdad or Bilat al-Sham and Morocco, two different continents, but rather in the same area, we see that there was difference. And it didn't bother at all. It didn't disturb the situation because both sides realized the hukum shari'i, that this is not qat'i issue. So if you want to take your view, you are entitled to do it. If you want to take the view of Muawiyah, you are entitled to. But also it tells us that at that time, it looks like the Khalifa Muawiyah did not impose, didn't announce, didn't declare that tomorrow is Ramadan, which is fine also, because the jurisdiction of the Khalifa, it can be changed based on the situation, based on the time. So even now, if the Khalifa wants to leave it to every area to decide on their own, they can. If he wants to unify, one day he can.
Okay, great. So I understand that this hadith that you've just quoted, it proves that at the time of Khalif Muawiyah, there was a difference of opinion in relation to moon sighting. And one Sahabi accepted that local sighting of the moon was perfectly acceptable, as opposed to other Sahaba who had an inclination towards a more global moon sighting, and all Muslims should abide by the moon sighting of any geographical area. Okay, I understand that. And so what about the scholars of Islamic history? What was the predominant opinion amongst the classical ulama?
Scholars, yes. The scholars regarding sighting, they have majority of them, main schools, actually, they said sighting the moon. And they differed on how to prove, to establish the sighting. How many witnesses? What about if it is cloudy? Can we fast what they call it Yom al-Shak? If today is Sha'ban and we are not sure today is the last day of Sha'ban 30 or Ramadan. So some people say let's fast just in case to make sure. They say fasting Yom al-Shak is different. There are differences on this, and the right opinion is actually no, you don't fast the doubted day. But there is also even a discussion down the road after that on calculations. Some jurists accepted the calculations in the past. I'm talking traditional scholars. All of these issues, none of them is definitive. That's the point. There are different ijtihads on this. In the presence of the Islamic authority, it will be fine. In the absence of the Islamic authority, it will be something we have to deal with until we find there will be a solution for this.
Many of my listeners would want to understand that last statement a little further. So you've said in the presence of an Islamic authority. Now, would the rulers in the Muslim world, would they qualify, or the scholars even in the Muslim world, would they qualify as an Islamic authority? So, for example, if the heads of the ulama in Pakistan decided upon a day, would it be mandatory on all Muslims of Pakistan to follow that committee?
Who I meant by the Islamic Authority, the legitimate Islamic Authority, the Khilafah, Wulat al-Amr. That's what I mean. But again, today, with the political division, every area thinks that the ruler is the legitimate and they have to follow. Do you want to argue with people on each and every single issue on this? Do you have even the power to convince all people on based on unified view? Practically, no, you don't. Now, like I said, by de facto, people will follow the ifta in their country, usually. Some people try to follow Ittihad al-Mata'la.
You mean global sighting?
But they will not be actually to unite people. They will not be able to unite people based on this this view. Okay, practically speaking, you will see the division. Every country or every area decides to fast on what they think that it is legitimate. Their mufti, their ruler, their jamiyat al-ulama, or so on. Some will cross this line and decide to fast based on ittihad al-matala, global. But even though this, are they going to be able now in current situation to unite people on this so that everyone will fast in one day? No, they will not be able to do it. Let's be practical. Should we make it a problem, a point of division between people, keep insisting on it? No, I think it shouldn't be. The education should go beyond then the hukum shari'i regarding how to establish the beginning of Ramadan. If you want to unite Muslims, then talk to them about the meaning of the unity. When is it a must? And when is it allowed for us to have different opinions? So unity is not a fard in each and every single aspect of life. And we know that Harun al-Rashid, I think, asked Imam Malik to impose al-muwatta upon people, unify people around the jurisdiction of the Abbasid Caliphate, around al-muwatta to apply what is there. And Malik refused. He told him no. So we need to realize that there are certain issues in which we have to be united, no doubt. And there are certain issues that tolerate difference. And citing the moon, or citing the moon versus calculation, or global citing versus local citing, now it is a matter that tolerates difference. If later on their Muslim authority is restored and got their power and their authority, and the Khalifa will decides to, if the constitution allows him to decide on this, to adopt a certain day, then he can do that.
But that was, so the Khalifa adopting is very much for a political purpose. But in the Sharia states that this is subject to ikhtilaf, difference of opinion, and a Muslim should show acceptance and toleration towards differences of views. But then why is it today this particular issue is so vexing in our communities? We always find at the beginning of Ramadan and at the end of Ramadan, there would be tensions, sometimes within a community and between mosques in one particular area. And now with the advent of social media, we would see no end of discussion about the moon sighting. Can you explain why this has become such a problem? If it's just, subject to difference of opinion.
First of all, it is natural, if you are convinced with an opinion, to try to call people to it and ask people to abide by it. But at the same time, if you give yourself the right to do so, you have to give also the others the right to pick and choose, because you don't have authority. to impose. That's fine. Communicate, educate, but at the same tolerance. There are some groups looking at it as political issue. They think that they can unite people, the ummah, to lead the ummah towards their objective. But they are not doing it right. They are doing it in such a way that it is leading to more conflict, dispute, to more division.
Great. So let's get into the details here about the moon sighting and the acceptable differences that may exist within the Sharia. So let's start with the use of technology. So we understand that the sighting of the moon is primarily built on the hadith, which states that we should observe the moon, the crescent, to establish the start of the lunar month. Now, does this evidence definitively exclude the use of technology, telescopes and binoculars, for example? And does it exclusively state that the sighting of the moon should be only through the naked eye?
Regarding the first question, this hadith is khabar ahad. So by de facto, it's not definitive in excluding other means. The ones who are calling for calculations, they are required at the same time to present their view and to present their evidence for this. They will tell you ru'yati, it can mean, ru'ya can mean to know about it versus to see it. And they say, the ayah, فَمَنْ شَهِدَ مِنْكُمْ الشَّهْرَ فَلْيَصُمْ. He who knows about the month, let them fast. So if you know about it and you know about the month through sighting or through calculations. So there is, that's the point. This, none of these views is qat'i. Now, regarding naked eye, the hadith talks about sighting it. But do you have to use, as an example, telescopes? You don't have to, but if you use it, it's allowed. I know in one experience, a local masjid, you know, asked us to go in a plane. There was a brother in the community who was pilot, so he rented a plane, small plane, and four of us, him and three other brothers from the community, and they want me to be with them. I told them I already decided. So what do you need me to go in the air and say? You know, we went and we didn't see it, and when we landed, we went there, we drove to the masjid, and they said, we saw it. They saw it, and we didn't see it. So you don't have to do this. There is qa'id, a maxim in Islamic fiqh, مَا جَعَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْكُمْ فِي الدِّينِ مِنْ حَرَجٍ. Allah did not intend to put burden on you. In the hadith of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم, إِذَا أَمَرْتُكُمْ بِأَمْرٍ فَأْتُوا مِنْهُ مَا اسْتَطَعْتُمْ. If I instruct you to do something, do it based on your ability. I don't have to go drive 90 miles to go to an observatory to observe the moon. I don't need to fly. I don't need even to bring any other optical means. I just look. If I saw it, that's fine. If I didn't see it, that's fine. So I don't insist on naked eye at the same time on naked eye. That's the point, Danny. It's not your view that exists in the world. Islamic fiqh is diverse, and there are certain issues that have room for more than one view, and this is one also, whether optical, using optical means or observatory, telescope, or just naked eye. All of them, I look at them at the same level. If you want to do it, that's fine. If it is available and you want to do it, that's fine. And if you don't want to do it, but rather use naked eye, that's fine. But don't, if you are using naked eye, don't fight with the one who wants to go and look at it through a telescope. Give room for different views.
And what about the use of calculations? So we know that the science has now progressed to such a level that we can probably predict to very near certainty when the moon will be born and how plausible it is that the moon will be sighted in any one place in the world. Can any of this science be used to replace moon sighting?
Okay, in the past, like you said, I mentioned in the past, I think Subki from among the Shafi'is accepted the calculations. So they're accepting the calculation is not an alien idea. It's there, it has validity. At least you see their point. Maybe you disagree with it, so you don't abide by it, but at least see their point of view. That's the most important thing. So don't fight if someone wants to follow the calculations. Don't create a fighting with him for this. Regarding using it, it is, according to this school, recent scholars, you have Sheikh Mustafa Zarqa accepted the calculation. Sheikh Yusuf al-Qardawi said, I will use the calculation to evaluate the sighting reports. So he accepted in negating sighting report, not in establishing the beginning of Ramadan. Nafi lal-ithbat. He says because the hadith talk about the moon sightability, sighting the moon. So I will stick to this. Mustafa Zarqa looked at the evidences that, okay, there are issues that can be changed by time. And this issue is one of them that can be changed by time. So how to decide the beginning of the moon when you are when the life was easy, it's practical, it's known that, okay, you just look, go and see. If now we have more ways to decide and the ayah is asking us to fast when we know about the moon, then this is one another way. So there is a point. Maybe I disagree with it, but at least I have to recognize that this is a point. This is a legitimate view. The point regarding the calculations, yes, as you mentioned, it is conclusive. They reached the moon based on these calculations. So it's not something we are trying to doubt. But the accuracy of the calculations in which area? In the conjunction time, in the phases of the moon, in the moon set every day, the quote-unquote moon rise. These things are conclusive. No doubt about this. But these calculations, how do you interpret them to decide whether tomorrow is Ramadan or not? This is not definitive. Because citing criteria is different. Some people will say we will not that if the moon is less than 13 hours in the horizon, it cannot be seen. This fact, it cannot be seen. Is it fact? Is it definitive? And I had a discussion with one astronomer. He said, no, this is not, no one did. It's most likely, yes, based on our statistics, most likely this will be. So it will not tell you when the moon will be seen. It will tell you most likely it will not be seen, actually, to be accurate. That's why those who follow calculations, there are two schools. One school says we want to follow the calculations once it is declared by science, by calculation, that this is a conjunction time, you know, where the moon and the sun and the earth are in straight line. Once it moves a little bit after that, that's it. It's a new moon. A new moon born. So it's a new month. Some people say no. And actually, I think Majlis al-Ifta in Europe and Fiqh Council in the United States, they adapted view more accurate. They tell you, we'll see how many hours, if the moon is enough, spend enough time in the horizon, enough to be seen, then yeah, we'll decide it. So I'm noticing, I follow moon sighting. I don't follow calculations, but I'm following also in the last few years, almost we are identical. But the first school, no, they can be in Turkey, I think they follow the first school. So there can be one day difference.
Okay, what about Sheikh Qardawi's view? I mean, that's been my practice. If someone comes with a moon sighting on a day where the moon was not born, and it's impossible to see the moon on that day because it was just a couple of hours old, for example. What about that view, using the moon sighting to negate an actual sighting.
Regarding Sheikh Yusuf al-Qardawi's view, he'll tell you, look, if the calculations are telling me that today the moon will set before the sunset, and someone came and that day I said I saw the moon, I will not accept his testimony because it collided with the fact. And if the testimony collides with the fact, it will not be accepted. So he'll accept the moon calculation and like he said, a nafi, in negating the testimony, negating the some news about it, not in proving the entrance of the month. So the debate is there, and each one has their view. And the problem is when we get into this fighting, like the fighting of Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. politics. Partisanship, what kills people.
I mean, what's your view on this? I mean, last year, for example, a friend of mine said to me that it was the 29th day of Ramadan and everyone was going to finish Ramadan on the 30th and complete the full complete month. But halfway through the day, he said that a sighting was given, a testimony was given, even though that testimony came before the moon was born, scientifically, at least from calculations, the moon could not have been sighted on that day. He said it was an obligation for me to fast or to break my fast so that I complete 29 days of Ramadan because of that issue. I mean, what's your view on this?
My view, yes, is that this, if someone comes to me and tells me I saw the moon, this is khabar or even a testimony, shahada, whether you want to consider it khabar or shahada, even in the presence of the Islamic authority, the judge can reject any testimony if it conflicts with the reality. The judge is not bound to accept any testimony, even if they are just witnesses. Here, in this case, this report or this testimony collides with the reality. The reality is that there was no moon. Like we said, conjunction is qat'i. Okay? It's very much similar to if we saw the moon at the Fajr of Wednesday. If we saw it at the Fajr of Wednesday, it means what? That it is Sha'ban. Okay? And in the same day, Wednesday evening, someone came and said, I saw the moon. It will not be Ramadan. We will not accept it. Because the moon will not rise twice in the same day. You know? So if he came and he said, I saw the moon, I will not accept his testimony. Why? Because we saw it on the Fajr time. And Fajr time means it's Sha'ban. It's still the old moon. It's not the new moon. So you are not to follow the report blindly. And those who insisted on that, they insisted on following the moon blindly. Last year, what happened? And by the way, you don't have the authority to go and ask people and ask them to make an oath to accept their testimony. You are not a judge. You can ask them, but you don't have the authority to ask for the yameen. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, we have the hadith of the Prophet that a man came, an Ikrimah, an Ibn Abbas, qala, he said, a Bedouin came to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and he told him, I saw the moon. He means Ramadan. So the Prophet asked him, he didn't know him, he came from outside Medina, to Medina. So he told him, I saw the moon. So he told him, do you bear witness that there is no God but Allah and me, the messenger of Allah? He said, yes. So he told him, قُمْ يَا بِلَالْ أَذِّنْ فِي النَّاسِ فَلْيُصُومُوا غَدًا. Stand up, Bilal, and now declare to people, let them fast tomorrow. He didn't ask him to make an oath. We are seeing it. He was trying to see it, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It's the time to look at it. It's not the 28th of Sha'ban. It was the 29th of Sha'ban. So probably, and it can be. So he accepted his news because he didn't see any conflict with the reality. It doesn't mean we shouldn't take this hadith blindly. Here now we talk about knowingly. We know that the moon was not quote unquote born, according to the casual language. So if the moon was not born, what did you see? And we know the reflection and the optical laws. How can you see things? You think that it is the moon. Like last year, I think they said Jupiter and Venus were close to each other. So some of them tried to explain what did they see in Africa. So insisting that no, tomorrow will be Ramadan, although the report goes against all conclusive data. So here we are not comparing Qat'i versus Qat'i. We're comparing Dhanni, which is sighting the moon, versus Qat'i. The moon is not born. So if you have Qat'i conflicting with Dhanni, you accept, you take the Qat'i. You don't take the Dhanni. This was the opinion of Sheikh Yusuf al-Qardawi, and I think this is the most correct opinion in this regard. That's why the Fuqaha said, if someone saw the moon and the Qadi didn't accept his testimony, even that person who saw the moon, he shouldn't fast. For us, you know, Salah and Zakah, and these are not rituals. I will insist on it no matter what. These are Ahkam Shar'iyya, came with certain evidences, and they need to be understood within certain context.
And let's talk about the witness that provides the evidence that they've seen the moon. Now, how do we determine the trustworthiness of the witness? Is it as loose as to say that he's a Muslim and one must accept the testimony of any Muslim? Or are there other conditions that are attached to a witness?
Well, in general, for the testimony, you need to have him as quote-unquote adl. Okay, but do you look at it as witnesses or do you want to look at it as news, carrying a news? If you look at it as carrying a news, did it establish for you a level of most likely it's correct, then you take it. Keep in mind that the jurists differed on the number of witnesses needed to establish the sightability of the moon. Some people said two. Hanafi and Hanabila and one opinion of Shafi'i say it is one. One witness is good enough. Even if the witness is a lady, it doesn't have to be a male. And this is one difference between Shafi'is and between Hanafis and others. They accepted the testimony of woman alone in sighting the moon. This is one view. It's another view says, no, they have to be two. But regarding the evidences which we have two hadiths from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. One hadith says Ibn Abbas, Ibn Umar said, and this is reported by Abu Dawood and others, that people looked, tried to see the moon. Tara an nas al hilal. So I told, فأخبرت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم أني رأيته. I informed Rasulullah that I saw it. So he fasted and he ordered people to fast. And the other hadith which I mentioned earlier, that a Bedouin came from outside Medina. Rasulullah didn't verify his justice. In the other hadith, when a Bedouin came from outside Medina and told the Prophet that they saw the moon, the Prophet didn't check his justice. Didn't ask him even to make an oath. He told him, because he didn't know him, are you a Muslim in other words or not? So he told him, I am, and he accepted it. So we don't need, I would say, we don't need even to ask about all of these things. You don't need to have more than one witness. They don't have to be men or males. Majority, the big bulk of the Ahkam Shar'iyya is built on Ghalabatul-Dhan. Ghalabatul-Dhan is not conclusive. What I think most likely is correct. What I think most likely is correct, it has room for doubt. It has room for dhan. And most of the ahkam shar'i are from this, even if the evidence is from Quran. The scholars who interpreted many ayat, and they differed in their interpretation. That means that their understanding is not qat'i. It is dhanni. Why it is dhanni? Because how can you make sure that this understanding is the absolute? So if it is dhanni, even if they are using the ayah, referring to an ayah in Al-Quran al-Kareem, still the view which they extracted is not conclusive. It is dhanni. So it's good enough to establish this testimony or this witness or this news. Did it create to you at this level? Most likely it's correct. If it is conflicting again, the factual, the conclusive facts, no, it does not. It does not even create this level. So I will not take it. So that people should look at this from this perspective.
And let me ask you about one further question about the trustworthiness of a witness. Now, we often hear that the government of UAE or the government of Saudi Arabia or the government of Libya or such governments, they've announced the Eid or the Ramadan, and they sometimes attach it to a witness, or sometimes they say we've come to a conclusion that it's Ramadan or Eid, and we know as Muslims that these governments are deeply untrustworthy in their injustice and in their wars and their pillaging of the Muslim countries. Can we trust these governments and their testimonies, I suppose, when they announce the new moon?
If their testimony did not collide or did not conflict with the reality, then, and you most likely thought that that testimony, that report is worth to be considered, then you take it. Again, good enough to reach to this level. Is it most likely acceptable or not? Usually, with the problem with the Saudi reports, they don't look at it if it conflicts with the reality. And one person came or two people came, they will announce. So that's what I said. You don't take it for granted, but rather, is it consistent with the calculations or not? If it's not consistent, I will not take it.
And on that subject, we often give a lot of prominence to Saudi Arabia when it comes to moon sighting issues. And maybe it's because it's a place of the holy sites, and it's the place where we go to Hajj. Is there a special place for Saudi Arabia when it comes to moon sighting for Ramadan and Eid?
Well, first of all, the special status is for Mecca as a Qibla in the Salah, not Qibla in fast. So in my Salah, I'll pray towards Mecca, whether I agree or disagree with the political authority there. But I don't have to take their fasting report as binding. The fact that we perform pray there towards that direction doesn't give it special status. So no, I don't have to give their testimony in moon sighting more consideration than any other place. If it is proven in Arabia or if it is proven in any other area, as long as the evidence, the news is consistent with the conclusive data about the moon, meaning that I have no reason to reject it, then I'll accept it. Not because it is coming from Saudi Arabia or from Egypt, but rather because there is a news about moon sighting and it is consistent with the facts, so there's no reason to reject it.
Now, we've spoken about local and global moon sighting from the perspective of accepting these are differences of opinion. But what's your view on the strength of local versus global moon sighting?
Yeah, we talked about it. We touched it in general when we talked about the hadith of Muawiyah and Quraib. But also, the discussion goes beyond than that. When it says لرؤيته, it made it general, not for your sighting, but rather for its sighting. That's another evidence. Third evidence, actually, the conjunction happens one time. There we have just one moon and one earth and one sun. We don't have parallel moon or parallel earth or parallel sun that we know. Now, don't get into the parallel universe. That's, we're not talking about that. But the moon which we know is one. The sun which we know is one. The earth which we live in is one. So there will be one conjunction time. And the moon does not, the moon stages, the moon actually does not have more than one conjunction. The moon will not keep born every day, every minute. It will be born at one time. And it will keep rotating around the earth. And as it rotates, people will keep seeing it. So if I, by de facto, in the same day, some people in the earth will not be able to see it. This is very natural because it's young enough to be seen. It's not old enough to be seen, actually, but young enough to say no one saw it. When you insist on the next day, you are not seeing the first night moon. You are seeing the second night moon. So the walker, the reality of the moon and its movement and its orbit around the earth tells you that these sightings are one, global, and tells you for sure in 3 months, some areas in the world will not be able to see it. Next month, maybe I'll be able to see it, and the other person in that place who saw it will not be able to see it. The reality tells you about Ittihad al-Matali'. But the problem with the proponents of Ikhtilaf al-Matali', first of all, they'll tell you it's not within our capability to unite. No, it is within our capability to follow the other opinion. They'll tell you it is like the Salah. You take Salah time based on your area, not based on other area. That's different. There's difference between fasting or seeing the moon and the time of the prayer. And they fail actually to tell us the borders of a certain matla. So some people said, if the two areas share one time of a prayer, then it is one matla. You know, there is overlap at times in places in terms of prayer. Some other people say, no, if it shares part of daytime or night, then it is matla. It means that the whole world is one matla. Because in London and in New York, you know, there is overlap in the daytime, right? There is a time in which both in London and New York will be daytime. So it is one matla. And London and Frankfurt is one matla. So how can you define the matla? It cannot be defined. Then there is the new, with the birth of the nation state, okay, now we have this definition, the borders. The borders which are drawn by whom? By the colonialists. So why do I have to consider Syria and Jordan different matla? Because they are different political entities. Why do I have to consider a person living at the Jordanian town of Ramtha next to the border and a person living at Dir'a, the north part of the border, which is in Syria? Why do we have to ask him to fast in two different days? Because of we want to maintain the nation state borders. Unfortunately, I read a fatwa from Rabitat al-Alam al-Islami. Of course, it's a Saudi organization. They were asked about the Hajj, not about Ramadan. And they are telling them, follow your sighting, as if they don't want people to get united, you know. Although the Hajj is based on what's happening in Arafah, but still they told them, no, just follow your own sighting. How can you tell them, give them such fatwa? Just because you want to respect the nation state. They said in another statement, because if we allow, say this, it will disturb the situation. No, it does not disturb the situation. You know, insist on the Eid al-Adha is linked to the Hajj, and that's it. So these are some arguments the proponents of local sighting are using. So I'm strongly against the moon, the local sighting, but I understand the evidences of those who accepted the calculations, although I don't see it till now, as a correct view.
So when you say it's not a correct view, it's based on some evidence, and so it's perfectly acceptable for a Muslim to believe other than you that they have a stronger evidence.
Yeah.
And one must respect that. But your opinion is that the global sighting is stronger.
Global sighting, yes, is stronger. But when it comes to the calculations, I will give it more consideration than the local sighting. That's all what I'm saying.
But even when it comes to the calculations, your view is that the calculations are only there to help you to determine when to sight the moon, rather than to determine when we should start Ramadan. So we have to still sight it.
Yes.
But as you said previously, there is a legitimate opinion that states that you can't even calculate and not have to physically sight the moon.
Yes.
And one final question about this is really about the general Hijri calendar. And I suppose a challenge that Muslims face is the lunar months is, of course, less predictable. And one will find it very difficult to schedule in this fast-moving world when a month can be 29 or 30 days. Is there any way apart from calculations, but you know, your view is that's not a strong view, but how do we get around this problem? Because, of course, the Gregorian calendar is very predictable, and one can sign contracts and determine, meetings well in advance, it's based on uncertainties.
Okay, when do we need the lunar calendar in Shari'i issues? As an example, actually, maybe in 3 or 4 issues, in moon sighting, and moon sighting in Ramadan and Shawwal, and Dhul Hijjah only, and in the Zakah, you follow the lunar calendar every 12 lunar months, and maybe some other one issue here and there. But what you can do is you have a calendar based on calculations. So in all other months, you follow your calendar, whether you want to have it in this country or in that country. But for Shari'i purposes, you will have this, which makes it more stable. Now, there is nothing wrong now in following the Gregorian calendar in conducting our business, of course. There is nothing wrong in that. You can do it because it is more stable. We know when is January, when is February. That's it. 5th of January. And the other areas, when you want to make reservations, they will do it based on the Gregorian calendar. Now, if you are following a lunar calendar based on calculations, that's fine, using the calculations in other occasions, other than fasting and Hajj. Because in Zakah, even if you don't have to follow to give your zakah in specific day. That if you don't give it in that day, you are breaking the rules of the zakah. But I have to fast Ramadan in a specific day. I have to stand at Arafah in a specific day. So being specific is needed in the Hajj and in Ramadan only. It's not needed to this accuracy, to this level of accuracy in zakah. So in Ramadan, I will distribute my zakah. At the beginning, at the end, that's fine. No problem. But in other months, you have fixed months, fixed calendar. So if you want to use lunar calendar, you look at what day you want to do it. In 5th of, as an example, Rajab, want to have a conference. And you look at the 5th of Rajab, what is the lunar, the calendar day, the Gregorian day for equal to the 5th of Rajab. Let's say the 10th of March. So you make your arrangements, you call your companies, you call your hotels to make reservations based on the, of course, 5th of March. Because it's not even, if you call London, Hilton, they don't have even the lunar months in their calendars. You know, So you'll follow the Gregorian calendar. That's fine.
Great. And actually, one very final question. And it's really a general question about our lack of unity and our disunity. And we've spoken about a subject today, which is sometimes a deep wound in many of the Muslim communities. And we are divided often on very small issues and often on issues which are not worthy of division. Sometimes there are issues to do with, very small differences of opinion. How do we navigate around this? How do we create a better sense of Muslim brotherhood, especially at a time of, a dire need? We are in a very sorry state around the world. How can we resolve this disputation over ikhtilafi issues?
Yeah, I think by building the right frame, put it within certain frame and educate people about it. As an example, there are certain things that are not subject for any compromise or any negotiation. The brotherhood. The brotherhood is a must. The unity is a must. But what does it mean? Another, which is part of this frame, which I talk about. Try to define areas where unity is must and areas where unity is not a must. In our history, as an example, we have the experience of the Mu'tazila and Al-Ma'mun. Al-Mu'tazila, they thought that they can impose their views upon people by the power of the caliph, the khalifa. And Al-Qadi ibn Dawood convinced Al-Ma'mun to impose the Mu'tazila view. So that created conflict in the society because it reached to a level where they started, he will not be hired as a judge or as an imam. That created division. Till now, we are intellectual division. Till now, we are suffering from. But at the same time, we know that Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal was imprisoned and was tortured, which of course shouldn't be the case. But later on, another caliph came, I think Al-Qadir Billah or Al-Muqtadir. But another caliph came and reversed what Al-Ma'mun adopted, but also reversed it in a wrong way. So he issued a declaration, Al-Watiqa Al-Qadiriyya, saying this is our belief. And they started interrogating people also. If you say that Quran is created, then you will suffer like what others suffered during that period of time. So they were wrong then, and they were wrong when they issued the Qadiriyya. This issue is a matter of aqidah. The Khalifa shouldn't get into. Why does the Khalifa have to impose a Mu'tazila view upon people? People rejected it. They didn't accept that. But at the same time, how to educate people? People will not be educated by issuing a declaration imposing contrary view. Educate people about this instead of dealing with it based on certain statutes issued by the government or by the judges. It reached to a level that not just Al-Mu'tazila versus Ahl-Sunnah, when Nizam al-Mulk wanted to build the Nizamiya school, he built it and appointed Imam al-Juwayni to be the head of that school to educate people according to Shafi'i madhab. Why? And Hanabila did the same thing. Why? There was a time in which the Hanabila in Baghdad acted like mobs. They attacked the house of Imam Tabari because of a few little things. He didn't list Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal as one jurist. He listed him as one muhaddith. And he carried another view. That's why at one time, Imam Ibn al-Jawzi complained about this. He said, Abu Ya'la al-Farra, actually tarnished the Hanbali school in such a way that the all ocean in the world will not clean the Hanbali school from the stigma that is attached to it because of Abu Ya'la al-Farra, which is the tajseem. Tajseem when you attribute to God human attributes. So the point here, this is not an area where you have to unify all people. In the Ahkam Shar'iyya, they don't have to follow the same view. If you are in a mosque and the one who is next to you raised his hand after the ruku', don't try to put his hand down. Or if he moved his finger index in the tashahhud, don't try to break his finger because of this, as what happens in certain times. Don't establish four jama'as in the masjid for every school. You know, there was, and I think till now, in al-Masjid al-Umawi, they established four jama'as for every salah. Hanbali, Shafi'i, Maliki, Hanafi. So we need to define which areas are needed to be put as a central point we need to, you know, be united around, and which areas where we can have room for difference and start educating people about this. And also, even with this, how Adab al-Ikhtilaf. Dr. Taha Jaber Fayad al-Alwani wrote a book, Adab al-Ikhtilaf, The Etiquettes of Differences, rahimahullah. And even I think many others wrote about this. Even if I don't see your view, at least do I see your point. That's very important. But don't look at it as black and or white. It's either my view or your view. No, here we have when they talk about diversity, and yes, alhamdulillah rabbil alamin, Islamic fiqh is diverse, and there is room to tolerate these opinions. That's why Shafi'i used to say, my view is correct, but it can be wrong. And the view of the others is wrong, but it can be correct. And when he differed with someone on a certain issue, he told him, okay, we disagreed on this. أَفَلَا يَسْتَقِيمُ أَن نَكُونَ إِخْوَانًا. Can't we remain brothers after this difference? Of course they can. If we have differences, it doesn't mean I have to turn my back to you, to him or to her or to you, or each one of us will turn their backs to each other. This is division. فَرَّقُوا دِينَهُ. Now we are dividing our religion. But if we have that frame established and we educate ourselves first and others about this, I hope that we can help in trying to overcome these issues.
Great. Jazakallah khair. Thank you for your time today, Ustaz Iyad Ilham.
Jazakallah khairan. Barakallah fiik.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.